Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Yeah, the sound of the Arctic Monkeys can only mean one thing. It is time for the Huddle Breakdown, the podcast dedicated to the stats, XG, and performance of Celtic. Welcome along, Enda here in the company of Alan Morrison and Jukko James. Guys, hello.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
So it's a whole new world we're living in. First match under John Kennedy, and I can confirm that Celtic have magically transformed into prime Barcelona. We were pinging the ball around for fun, triangles all over the pitch, and confidence that we've not seen in the players for years. That was for the first 30 seconds, and then the last 89 and a half minutes were slow, monotonous, and pretty much the exact same as we've seen for the last few months. We have been doing this podcast for a fair few months now, guys, so I've decided it's time to actually, you know, put a little bit of structure to it, because we've just been coming on and just chatting numbers for the last few weeks. So the listenerships deserve more. We've got a steady listenership. They want more. They want segments. They want everything just quick fire. And in it, it's the world that we're living in. So these are the segments that we're going to be talking about. These are the segments of the show going forward. We're going to have the breakdown, which is the main analysis of the game, which is coming now. We've got the Duff Award for the worst performer of that game. And we've got boy of the match, B-H-O-Y, of course, obviously. But obviously, I can't say that on the pod. And then finally, we'll have the stat of the day, which is what it says on the tin. So let's get into the breakdown then. Celtic 1, Aberdeen 0. Austin Edouard with the only goal of the game coming 7 minutes in. What a belter, James.
Not so much. a kissing cousin to the Aberdeen game of the week before, or whenever that was. So there were certainly some aspects that were encouraging, a bit of a mini time machine back to the Rodgers era, probably late Rodgers, where the football wasn't terribly entertaining. A lot of possession without a whole lot coming from it. For those that missed the first 10 minutes because of the Paradise issue with the broadcast past the Paradise, you know, it was I found a stream pretty quick for Aberdeen TV, and it's for people that missed the first 10 minutes, it's probably a good thing. So it looked like maybe the players didn't hit the ground running with whatever new instructions they had, and Aberdeen were in pretty good control the first 10 minutes, and then we kind of got into it a little bit, and I would say pretty much dominated the rest of the first half. Again, not with a lot of end product. If we're trying to kind of seek out positives, I thought it seemed to be more logical patterns of play. The relationship between Edouard and Klamala seemed to be coherent. Edouard got on the ball a lot, which is generally a good idea with your best player. His touches were, I think, by far his highest of the season. I think the only two games that were reasonably close were two against Hamilton. So that tells you, you know, kind of the scope of how much he was on the ball. Again, he didn't do a ton with it. That's a whole different issue. But, the fullbacks played higher up, so that seemed to be something that was different. We got something out of the fullback play, which is completely different than what we've seen the rest of the season. So there was definitely some differences, I would say, that were noticeable. And given the fact that we really only had, 3 or 4 days after Lennon leaving, try to put some positive spin on it. I think that could be some things to be encouraged about as we go through the rest of the season here. Hopefully, selection was interesting, not my ideal. Who knows what's going on with Barkas? Maybe he's done.
Injured, I think.
Yeah, he's injured?
No,
yeah.
Well, I've not seen it confirmed, but that's what I've read in various other sites and what have you. But I've not seen that confirmed by the club, actually.
Yeah, that would make sense. Still having Brown over Soro is an interesting decision to make. But outside of that, Brown's utilization was encouraging. Actually, again, back in time, a little bit more central and deep, kind of like 17-18 under Rodgers. And, you know, magically, I don't know if you got a chance to look at it yet, Alan, but his output from being more central and disciplined was almost exactly 25% below his that season average, as you talked about into the you know, and it, generally speaking, his total defensive output. So again, not surprising. It, to a degree, confirms a lot of what we talked about on his decline podcast, which was, you know, he was closing a lot of that decline gap based off of some ill-discipline running around, maybe. So, but I'd rather have him disciplined and central than, you know, we didn't get caught out a lot on transitions. It was mostly just Ash Taylor and headers. That was the problem.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, people have been harping on and about the tactics with that. And I think I've come around on that a little bit. There's certainly some of that, obviously, but our physical profile is just not great on set pieces. And no. I've talked about that before. You know, we don't have a lot of size. We don't have a lot of athleticism. And I think that's a big problem. So, you know, Stephen Welsh is not going to get 5 inches on his vertical leap or grow 4 inches. You know, Callum McGregor is not all of a sudden going to become a defensive dominant midfielder and set pieces. So we just don't have a great team at the selection disposal, given the injuries with Julian and Duffy basically being out and not being selected. So, you know, from an XG perspective, it was kind of one of those coin flip games. I find this was a good game for the looking at the variance in XG models. So how did people, you know, how did an XG model classify the Klamala chance? Pretty good deviation there on XG models on that opportunity. Some had it extremely high because it was central. Others that are a little bit more detail oriented, I think, had it lower, meaning it was a cross and it was using his off foot, for example. You know, him trying to score on a cross with his left foot may not be as high of an opportunity. So that's where you get into the nuance of you know, XG models. So generally, you know, like I said, not a great performance overall, but some encouraging signs that maybe we can grow into. Mm-hmm. And some coherence, which was nice to see.
Yeah, I think the starting lineup was something that interested me, because obviously you think Klamala is going to be the man who stretches the defense. And I saw someone on Twitter, and it was well spotted by them, that it was actually a Klamala run that took two Aberdeen players out of the game for Odson Edouard's goal. So, I mean, there is swings and roundabouts to these. You may not see him for 90 minutes, but moments like that prove that there's a reason why he is in the team. So I thought that was interesting. I can't remember the guy who shared it, but it was a really interesting take. Alan, your thoughts on the game, or what stood out to you?
Sure. So today I'm going to be good cop. So I wouldn't say I was kind of juiced by this, but like I was kind of moderately enthused, which is as good as it gets these days. Okay. So listen, it seemed to me, I thought if I had to kind of summarize it, what Kennedy did is he simplified the game, Celtic's game, and the changes he made were logical, right, to my mind, in the main, okay? And what we saw, I think, as we've alluded to, is a very possession-dominating approach to the game. And it really was a hark back to Rodgers' ball. It really was. In the first half, Celtic completed 365 passes. I mean, we're on course for a 700 pass game. Never happens under Lennon. It might have happened against like really, really poor opponents, but generally against a team like Aberdeen, that is back to Rodgers' ball. But what is interesting is that it faded actually quite badly in terms of our ability to maintain that style of play. Playing that possession game may not look as if you're taking, you know, it's much effort, but actually it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of discipline. There's constant movement, constant positioning required to receive passes, constant decision-making. You know, if you compare that to a more direct approach where there's more break-up and play, there's less continuity, you know, it actually takes quite a lot of discipline and effort, as I say, to play this way. And what I found the most perplexing and worrying aspect of the whole game for me was how Celtic faded so badly physically. And couldn't maintain the style that Kennedy had set them up to play. They only completed 210 passes, roughly, in the second half. packing, you know, virtually stopped for about 20 minutes after around about the 35 minute mark. There was no shot at all at goal between the 50th and the 83rd minute, and there was only one after the 35th minute. So Celtic actually got really good control of the game. You know, their impact score, which is their, you know, the score of how well are we breaking down lines, it had racked up to an impact score of 232 by half time, and only another 139 in the second half. You know, XG was about 1.05 by half time, and then nothing until the last 5 minutes, which actually shows you that if anything, Aberdeen actually faded and tired even worse than Celtic did. But Celtic tired earlier and then had to sort of fall back to control the game. So definitely, as I predicted on Twitter, a fallback to Rodgers' ball. I think it's sensible. I think the players I think we can control the game better. In terms of some other things that I think happened that simplified the game, as James rightly said, the fullbacks were actually higher. Now you might think that introduces risk, and we've spoken all season about the fullbacks being caught out on transition. But actually, what I saw was they were given a lot of latitude and freedom, vertically, but not horizontally. So you didn't see them moving around the field in field too much. So although Kenny and Laxalt both lost the same number of passes in open play as they normally do, with Kenny it was 9, which is about his average, and Laxalt it was 11, and 10's his average. But mm-hmm. six of those lost passes between them were actually crosses. So they were actually at least getting into positions to lose the ball by trying to create. So that was good. The really big thing that stuck out for me in terms of defensive discipline from the fullbacks was that both of them were only packed twice, which means they were only taken out of the play by forward passes twice each. Now, the average for Kenny is 4.5, and the average for Laxalt is 7 again. So to me, that was a massive improvement in terms of that defensive shape, that fullback defensive discipline. And then it may just be coincidental, but as James also alluded to, they actually both had really great games from an expected assist perspective. Kenny racked up 0.64 expected assists. His average is 0.2. Laxalt was 0.35 expected assists. His average is less than 0.1. Right. So they were more defensively disciplined. They didn't get caught out on the transition, and they created more. And so I think that's, and I think it mainly came from that, you know, that vertical freedom over horizontal freedom, and just simplification of the game from the fullbacks. And I'll be honest with you, just from an eye test, I thought that both fullbacks looked like they both had their best games for Celtic.
Yeah. Actually. Well, going into the game, that was one thing that John Kennedy said, and it was that he wants to simplify it and get back to improving where they know their weaknesses are. Although there was one point where Laxalt had the freedom of the park to cross the ball in, and he crossed it about 10 yards too far. And at that point, I was just thinking to myself, I genuinely would fancy myself to put in a better cross than Laxalt on my bad foot.
Agreed.
And I'm playing Sunday League amateur football in Dublin.
There's certain things Kennedy or Ancelotti or Mourinho or whoever is never going to change. And Diego's lack inability to cross a lofted ball from wide is one of those things. What I did notice was, again, both of them were putting more emphasis on low cutbacks. So that, again, that Manchester City model of high possession, patience, getting flooding the box and then getting low, hard balls into those dangerous areas. If that's the way we're moving, then I'm kind of happy with that. Mm-hmm.
One thing that James brought up there that I wanted to get your thoughts on, Alan, maybe you have the data, maybe you don't. Odson-Edouard, very clearly, it was onto him to get on the ball and go at the defence, sort of like what he used to do, come a little bit deeper, get the ball and run at the defence. How many times did he do that, or do you have the numbers for that?
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely did. So I think James mentioned, I mean, so he completed 34 passes, which is the equal season high. And as James said, you know, two games against Hamilton, I think, were the only time he kind of got near that or equaled it. He got possession in the box eight times, and that's his average for the season is five. I think he had two unsuccessful dribbles, and he miscontrolled the ball twice, and he made loads of poor decisions. I mean, none more so than at the end when Sorrow was free to his left, and they could have killed the game. So it was very much a mixed bag from Edward. I think this again, notion of having Klimala staying high, and bear in mind, you know, Klimala completed five passes. I mean, he was rarely in the game. Allowed Edward almost complete freedom to roam. And as James said, you know, giving your best player that freedom makes absolute sense. So his XG, his expected scoring contribution, assists and goals, was 0.73, and his average is over one. So he wasn't necessarily particularly productive. And obviously his goal was from a shot from outside the box, low probability, and took a big deflection. But in terms of what I'm encouraged about is the fact that he's given freedom to connect to players like Turnbull and McGregor and so forth. I think on Klimala, it was actually, you know, I think one of the interesting things that's happened in the last few weeks, we've had a couple of new additions to the Celtic data analytical community. So one of those, Tony, who runs Celtic Trends on Twitter, so give him a follow. I think he's the guy you were alluding to. He actually did a piece which highlighted really well the movement that Klimala had during the game, the number of runs he made that were just never picked up, and passes that never happened. So I think what I would say out of that is that, stick with it, give it a chance, let it breathe, let it. There's nothing to play for, and certainly in the league games. So give him a chance. I just want to touch on Brown, if I may. So obviously, you know, James mentioned that again. I think he simplified Brown's game. Again, so Brown's again, he limited his wandering vertically and stayed very much as the one that dropped in to the back to make the back three. And the reason for that was with the two strikers, they were trying to sort of cut off, you know, Ayer and Welsh, you know, creating the momentum going forward, forcing them to go long to two sort of forwards who aren't great in the air. So Brown basically dropped in and made that third player and allowed Celtic to build and keep possession. And Aberdeen didn't really sort of sort that out until the second half a little bit. Brown was only packed five times, right? So he was only taken out by forward passes five times. His season average is 13. So to me, that's simplifying his game, having him sit deeper. He wasn't dribbled past at all, and he didn't lose the ball in the defensive third once. His average is about, he does that once every two games. And he actually had 21 recoveries, and his average is 15. And his defensive action success rate was 75%, and his season average is 65%. So, what Kennedy managed to do in that game is absolutely maximise what he got out of Brown. So, you've got to give him credit for that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to touch on before we move on, James?
No, Alan did a brilliant job there. I mean, that's exactly the issue we've talked about. Alan talked about, I forget the exact phrase he used. I apologize. What was it? The compounding when we had, you know, Duffy.
Toxic combinations.
Yeah, the toxic combination. So it wasn't only the toxic combinations under Lennon of the players, it was the utilization of those players. So, you know, we talked about this really since we started this show, is about how unfair it's been to these players, where they've been asked to play roles or not really given roles and just thrown out there. One of the former players talked about this week about how, you know, or it was John Collins, actually, was on a show and talked about how there hadn't been any language support for a foreign player coming over on the part of the club. I would be shocked if in the midst of a pandemic, Laxalt, who I'm assuming he doesn't speak English still, was thrown into a Celtic team in the midst of the hardest stretch of fixtures of the season as a starting left back in a system where there's not a whole lot of direction coming in anyway, in a language he doesn't understand, and he's not getting any help in that regard. Mm-hmm. So again, it's about these issues of putting players in positions to succeed, or at least better positions to succeed. Whereas, you know, there was just so many things stacked on top of each other, where players being in bad positions, not getting the support they need in the midst of a pandemic, you know, and that was the mess of the fall.
Yeah, it's tough. And as someone who is incredibly difficult to understand because of my accent, I can imagine how difficult it is to understand Scottish people as an Italian if that is not your first language. You would.
Oh, he's Uruguayan.
Or Uruguayan, sorry.
Right. Yeah, in Italy, yeah, though. Yeah, all right. Yeah, so that's exactly.
He probably speaks Spanish and Italian, to be fair.
Probably speaks. Yeah, you're right. He probably speaks Spanish and Italian. Yeah.
Give or take, it's a European language that he speaks, and he's trying to learn English through Scottish, which is pretty tough. Moving on to the Duffer Award or the Duff Award. I'm not sure where this title comes from, James. That was your idea. I wanted to call it the F.A. Ambrose Award. You went for the Duffer Award. It's not Damien Duff, I presume.
No, it's a play off of Duffy, but also my affection for The Simpsons and beer. So it's kind of a clustering effect of those three things. So
anyway, it is the award for the worst performer off the game, and I can imagine. Can I have a guess who you have?
This is completely subjective. So you go ahead. You tell us what you think, because there's no right or wrong answer with this.
Well, I'm going to go, even though we did point out that run, it has to be Klamala for me, because I can't remember seeing him do anything apart from that run, which was pointed out to me after the game. Apart from that, I can't remember him doing anything. I don't want to be too heavily critical of him, because it's his first game in how long in a system that he hasn't played. And I mean, he's lacking sharpness, so you have to give him time.
See, I actually was okay with Klamala. Alan, what'd you have on his XG? I mean, it was depends on again the model, but it was decent. He had two good chances.
Yeah,
two reasonable chances.
This is where the continuity editor needs to step
in. That's all right. My bad. Well, I'll keep rambling while you look it up.
He's actually no. Listen, his expected scoring contribution was 0.78, which is only behind Christie.
Right. Which again, given his touches. So I think
mainly through that one big chance, right?
Right, right. So good point, but it's the issue of quality over quantity. Is there a role if you're going to play two strikers? Does one have to be the one that's because I think one of our problems has been either playing a midfielder at striker in a two striker system, or two strikers that drop. And yeah. I think just the way he played the game was good. I think Welsh had a rough game. I'm going to give him my Duffer Award. And that for people that missed the first 10 minutes, that's important context. Cause he got absolutely smoked a couple of times, in the first part of the game. And, I've expressed my skepticism about him longer term. He might improve under Kennedy. Hopefully he's got some of those ball chasing tendencies that you see. He comes kind of out chasing things at times. We against a better team, I think a couple of those opportunities where he got beat pretty bad early, could have very easily been goals. So I
have this theory, that what happens in the first 5 minutes affects 95% of people's perception of the rest of the game.
Yep.
And if somebody does something wrong in the first 5 minutes, which Welsh did, had an error in the first 5 minutes. He actually only, basically colours judgment.
Yep.
Aberdeen had that. Aberdeen basically took advantage of the fact that Celtic as a team made three defensive errors in the first 4 minutes. And it was all because they were trying to play out from the back and trying to play this more measured approach, right? And then they were just adjusting to it. And then on 5 minutes, we had that corner where they created the bulk of Aberdeen's expected goals from that three chances off of one corner, right? Yep. And, Welsh, Laxalt, Brown were all chasing the ball and getting nowhere near it type of thing. So, but actually...
the Keystone Cop of our corner.
It was that. We've seen it so many times. Welsh had the highest defensive action success rate in the game at 89%. He only lost one challenge stroke intercept. He was his defensive numbers were better than Ayer's.
With the inaugural Duffer Award for May, yep. I'm going to give it because that you could give that same profile to Duffy in multiple of his games where he had dominant defensive action success rate. He was dominant in the air and he had one or two errors that just.
I'm talking one error.
This is why we need the award, because I wanted to stir the pot a little bit.
That's right.
You guys
right.
disagreeing with each other for once.
And it goes to show, because again, I there was an error he had, but he also got smoked one other time where a guy blew by him. And that's, you know, back to fine margins where, you know, Aberdeen's just not very good. I mean, they lost Wright, they lost Hedges. I mean, they had the components, I think, of being a pretty decent team this year, even with, you know, McInnes is the manager. They had the athleticism and the youth to basically, you know, play his man marking kind of scheme. But at this point, they're just not very good. So it's a good example of where, you know, some of those things aren't punished domestically against certain opposition, where, you know, a couple of weeks, I worry about Welsh against, you know, a Rangers side. I worry about us trying to play out from the back in this, you know, Rodgers ball flashback. Which, by the way, Rodgers isn't really playing as much anymore, which is the interesting thing.
Yeah, different players.
Yeah, he's incorporated a little bit of the German style with counter pressing, be a little bit more direct. But so, you know, I'm hopeful still. I mean, I hope Welsh finishes the season well. I do. It's just I'm worried. I still see signs that, you know, it might be a little bit too early for him.
The other positive I would say from him is in the second half, Aberdeen basically parked Camberry onto Ayer in the same way as Jordan White had been parked onto Ayer. Yeah. Ayer made 54 passes in the first half and 7 in the second half.
Yeah.
He had 2 progressive runs and 2 successful dribbles in the first half and 0 in the second half. Now, to me, that's an issue for Ayer. Ayer's got to problem solve that one. He's got to work out if they're going to stick the centre forward on me and remove one of Celtic's main ball progression weapons. He's got to work out how to kind of get around that. But Welsh actually had more of the ball in that second half and was more impetus on him. Now, he's not particularly brilliant at getting the ball forward, but he was 95% on his passing. You know, he was decent. I think he did a decent job there.
Very safe.
But yeah, he was safe. Which is the right thing.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, this just goes back to kind of the general analytics evolution. So there was a piece that came out last week. It's a series. And I retweeted it out, so I don't know if you'd seen it. I'll send it to you, a link. But it's from American Soccer Analysis, some guys that publish on that website.
Yes, good stuff.
Yeah, so they've gone across the five big leagues in Europe, and they've also looked at MLS data from, I think, 15-16, and looking at the importance of progressive passes, the relative contribution that they have to goal scoring, and then the types of progressive passes that lead to goal scoring the most. And it, you know, when you talk about, you know, people, this is where, you know, this discussion about fans, no fans, you know, the impact on, let's say, a Liverpool and how, you know, that's been a narrative and, you know, they draw that correlation between Celtic and how certain teams have been disproportionately impacted, supposedly. I think it's difficult to understand the cascading impact of someone like Van Dijk not playing and how much he does in carrying the ball, his passing, his progressive passing from deep, and the type of ball progressions he does, and the cascade that creates. And I think that Celtic with Julian out or not having played Julian, because his progress, I'm not comparing him directly to Van Dijk, obviously, but, you know, that's not really a strength of Ayer either. That deep lying passing, his is more dribbling. So if you neutralize Ayer, we don't have and you're playing Brown in that dropping deep role. We basically don't have anyone playing deep that has that skill set.
Yeah, because the fullbacks, as we know, are not good passers of the ball.
Well,
even with time and space in front of them.
Exactly, and if they're going to be playing higher up, as it might be appear under Kennedy, so that's going to be a problem. I think that we're going to have now is, you know, and we saw that, I think a fair amount where with Brown dropping deep between the center backs, you then had McGregor collapsing to get central, to get on the ball. And, you know, he's decent at that, but that's really not his game either. You know, he's pretty good, but I wouldn't say that he's, you know, exceptional at that. So, you know, that's something to keep an eye on as we, you know, again, we don't have a lot of, well, I mean, once we get to the split, you know, the rest of the games are at least going to be reasonably competitive, and we've got the two derbies left and maybe a third, theoretically, hopefully in the Scottish Cup, or I guess not hopefully, hopefully they get knocked out early. But, so, you know, I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch relative to, what we do. Because of that American Soccer Analysis piece, I then went back and relooked at some stuff. I even looked at Soro's time in Israel with through passes, because through passes have, you know, the two progressive passes that have by far the highest probability of having a goal scored after it are cutbacks. Again, Alan, your point about us targeting that more under Kennedy last week. And then the second one is through balls. And, you know, that's where that deep-lying midfielder could have a lot of value. And Soro's output there is a good bit higher than Brown. And again, that's where you get into Rangers. They have much more of that out of Davis, where if you look at total midfield creativity, that, you know, Davis does a lot of through balls. Mm-hmm. So... you know, again, another thing to keep an eye on, how are we getting chances created from midfield? And back to the issue of, well, you know, are our strikers getting involved enough? You know, is Klamala being starved, making his runs? I think as Tony showed, he made a lot of good runs. Yeah. But who's getting, you know, who's making those through passes for Celtic right now? Well, the main guy is Turnbull.
Yeah.
But again, Turnbull's almost always on the left. So he drifts left too. So
I'm going to segue from that, James, into he was my duffer. He was my duff of the week, was Turnbull. So he had the lowest packing stats of all four midfielders and Edouard. He had the lowest scoring contribution of any of the forward players at 0.16. And he also contributed a defensive error, a turnover in the first half that led to McCrory having a shot on target. And what occurred to me was, one of the things which, not just under Kennedy, started to happen a little bit under Lennon as well, is, as you rightly say, the physicality of the team is another systemic issue that we've got. And so we're starting to play a lot more short corners and free kicks, taking them quickly. And it did strike me that if you remove that set piece play from Turnbull's armoury, you know, how much are you going to diminish him by? And in this game anyway, his open play contribution was unfortunately very, very low. So he was my duff of the week in that game.
more positive then, because Alan, you've been the shining light of this Aberdeen 1-0 win for Celtic. Who's your boy of the week then? Who's your man of the match?
Yeah. So as I say, I didn't go. You know, the fans went on Celtic TV, went for Ayer, and as I say, for the reasons that he didn't solve the problem in the second half, and for the reasons that his defensive action success rate was lower than Welsh's, I didn't go with Ayer. So the guy I went for, he had the highest defensive action success rate of all the forward players at 43%. He had despite the fact he had 91% pass success rate, he created 6 chances, including an assist. He had the highest expected assists and the highest secondary expected assists, and that was Christie. So he was my of the match.
Take a bow, Ryan Christie. You've actually done something good that has
an average day at the office for
Christie. Yeah, wow.
What has Alan been crying out for with Christie is exactly what he finally got, which is more of a defined role in a defined system and harnessing some of those, you know, how many terrible shots did he take? One? Oh, I think only one.
He didn't have many shots. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think
that's more of a team thing. I don't think they didn't have as many really. I mean, shots outside the box. He had one, right? McGregor had two. McGregor's little cameo at 10, where he had 3 shots in the last 5 minutes. It was like amazing.
Yep.
But yeah, no, Christie was it for me.
Oh, wow. James, anyone stand out for you?
Yeah, so I'm going to go I think Christie's a good shout. I'm going to go with Bain because I think if you look at post-shot XG, you know, basically the difference in the game was his save on the Ash Taylor shot. I thought we're again coherently using Bane more. I mean, he had the one terrible turnover on the one play out from having possession, but you know, he's a pretty decent shot stopper for his size, I think. And he's had some stretches where he's really played well in the past. I don't think he's the long-term solution. But, you know, when you have a game where basically the keeper gets you 2 points, which I think you could argue he did in that game, then, you know, I'll give it to Bane.
Fair enough. I'm going to give it to the player who I don't necessarily think had the best game, but it was just wonderful to see him actually get back to what he was best at doing, and that's Odson Edouard. He scored the goal, but it's been so almost sad watching Odson Edouard this year be absolutely starved of any sort of passes into him, crosses into the box of any quality, and even just not being allowed to do his role to the best of his ability. And I'm going to miss Odson Edouard when he's gone. So I thought it was great to see him back doing what he is best at doing. Before we finish up then, the stat of the day, the most interesting stat, the best stat, the worst stat that is used by the co-commentators during the game. Where are we going with this, Alan?
Can I just be a little bit cheeky? We didn't cover the Ross County game. We were on the 20 Tims Patreon last week, and we didn't really, obviously because of the events of Lennon leaving, we didn't cover the Ross County game at all. I do want to just touch on a couple of stats from that game, if I may, because they are brilliant. So listen, and this is positive, right? This is, you know, this is one player who you cannot say ever threw in the towel, whoever let his head drop, whoever didn't play his heart out for the manager, in that absolutely, you know, woeful performance against Ross County, this player had nine secondary assists, nine, right? Five being his previous high in the season, as well as defensively, 23 recoveries. And again, his season average is 12, and that was Callum McGregor. So I think those two stats were just stunning for me in that dreadful match. In terms of stat of the week from Aberdeen, it's Christie, 6 chances created. That's fantastic.
James, anything from you?
No, I echo that. I thought Christie was brilliant. It especially with the left-handed nature of our attack, which is, you know, as long as Brown and McGregor are playing together, that's probably going to sustain. So, he basically created the goal with that. I mean, that was an excellent pass to Edouard into that space. And so that, to me, that was... you know, we talked about Rodgers' ball. I mean, that was a level of football that we haven't seen all that often this year, where somebody makes a good run, a player identifies a good passing lane, makes a spot-on pass, and that was a good shot. I mean, we talk a lot about shots outside the box, and those aren't all created equal. I think we only had one shot that I would argue was a bad shot in the game. The other handful of shots were just outside the 18, and central.
That goal was coherent because Clamala went one way, Edouard went the other, and the Christie pass was one of these passes I love. That sort of inside diagonal pass, but it's very difficult to defend if you get it right, and it just completely. I mean, Aberdeen, as you say, were not great, but it completely confused the hell out of them.
The only other thing I'll say is I want to give. So I saw a behind the goal angle of that last play with Edouard and Soro. I actually think the bad decision Edouard made was not playing through Elyounoussi, who's making a kind of a little mini run, had the inside shoulder of the defender. Because if you look at the angle that Soro had, and I'm Edouard, I'm not sure I'm passing the ball to Soro there either.
Just take a shot on his left foot, yeah.
Well, right. He was fairly, it was an angled shot. I mean, it was pretty severe angle. And to think that he was going to one-time a shot to score from there, so I think, you know, I think he's gotten slaughtered over that decision, not playing Soro. And I think actually, if you look at the replay, Elyounoussi was probably the pass to make, slip him through. So just thought I'd raise that one.
Well, listen, as I said, it's a whole new world. Celtic won a game. They had some coherence. Ryan Christie wasn't shooting from outside the box, and the huddle breakdown has a bit of structure to it. So It only took us until March. I mean, there's still 3 months of the season left. So we hopefully will have more wins like this. And hopefully, you know what, like, it was 3 days that John Kennedy had working with this side as the first team. And as he said, it was an emotional week as well for them, because the manager who has been with them for a long time has resigned from their job. So it was all about getting the win, and they got the win, and hopefully there'll be more wins to come until the end of the season. James Allen, brilliant as always. If you want to listen back to the Huddle Breakdown, you can find us on Spreaker, on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, we are there. And you can follow us on Twitter as well at Huddle Breakdown. We'll chat to you later.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.